A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's question this week is about the weird things you can attach to a drill. Cleaning brushes, jigsaw converters, sanding and sharpening kits. The whole aftermarket universe of accessories that turn a hole-making tool into something else entirely. His real question is, which of these are useful, which are garbage, and how they compare to just buying the standalone tool.
And the first thing to say is that the premise is right. Most people see a drill as a thing that makes holes and drives screws. But the motor inside a drill is really just a generic rotary power source with a chuck bolted to the front of it. Once you see it that way, the accessory market makes total sense.
It's a motor looking for a job, and the accessory market is just a long list of jobs people have tried to give it.
And some of those jobs are a natural fit, and some of them are a fight against what the tool actually does mechanically. The question Daniel's asking is really how to tell the difference before you spend money.
So let's start with the cleaning brushes, because that's the most accessible test case, and also the one that sounds the most like a joke.
It does sound like a joke. You see a kit of nylon brushes that mount on a drill chuck and you think, this is a late night infomercial product. But here's the thing, Epicurious actually tested these and came away saying they weren't a joke. The reviewer went in expecting a gimmick and ended up impressed with how well the brushes handled bathroom cleaning.
Epicurious. The food site.
Yeah, which is funny, but they have a whole kitchen and bathroom testing operation. And Homegrail did a review of drill brush kits and found they handled grout, tile, and general bathroom surfaces really well. So the testing is out there, and it's surprisingly consistent.
Let's talk about why it works. A drill spins at what, 500 to 3000 RPM?
That's the typical range for a cordless drill. Corded can go higher. But even at the low end, 500 RPM is doing something your wrist can't do. Human scrubbing is maybe a few hundred strokes per minute if you're really going at it, and each stroke has a tiny fraction of the torque a drill puts out. The rotation is doing the work. You're just guiding it.
So the drill is a motorized elbow. That's the whole pitch.
And it's a good pitch. The brushes themselves are just nylon or silicone bristles on a shaft that goes in the chuck. You're not asking the drill to do anything it wasn't designed to do. It's spinning. That's it. The brush handles the surface contact.
Daniel specifically asked about cleaning a toilet with a drill, which, I'll be honest, is the sentence I never expected to say on this show.
It's not absurd. It's actually effective, with two caveats. One, you use a brush dedicated to that purpose and never let it near anything food-related. Two, you want a brush with a flexible shaft or an extension so you can get into the bowl's curve, and you run the drill at low RPM.
Low RPM because of splashback?
Splashback is the whole game. A drill brush spinning at full speed in a toilet bowl is a very effective way to redecorate your bathroom. But at low speed, the bristles do the work, and the liquid mostly stays where it belongs.
And the cost comparison?
A drill brush kit runs $15 to $30. A standalone powered scrubber is $50 to $150. And the standalone scrubber is a single-purpose tool that takes up space and has its own battery to keep charged. The drill brush is a few pieces of plastic and nylon that live in a drawer.
So, for occasional deep cleaning, it's a sensible purchase. What's the downside?
The downside is ergonomics and wear. The drill is heavier than a scrub brush, so extended use gets tiring. And there's a real mechanical limitation here that most people don't think about. Drills are designed for axial load, force pushing straight into the chuck. Scrubbing puts lateral force on the chuck and the bearings, sideways force.
So, the drill is getting pushed in a direction it wasn't built to be pushed.
Right? For occasional cleaning, it's fine. The forces are small and the duty cycle is short. But if you're doing heavy scrubbing for hours at a time, you're putting wear on the chuck bearings that drilling wouldn't cause. It's not going to destroy your drill overnight, but it's a real consideration.
So cleaning brushes work because they extend what the drill naturally does. It spins, the brush scrubs. Now let's talk about the counterexample, because Daniel mentioned these specifically, and he's heard they're bad ideas.
The jigsaw conversion attachments. And he's heard right, these are bad.
Let's explain what they're first.
It's an attachment that mounts in the drill chuck and supposedly converts rotary motion into reciprocating motion. Inside the housing, there's a cam or crank mechanism. The chuck spins a shaft, the shaft drives a pin that moves up and down, and the pin drives a jigsaw blade.
So it's a mechanical translator. Rotation in, back and forth out.
And that's the problem. The translation is bad. A real jigsaw has a stroke length of 20 to 26 millimeters. That's the distance the blade travels up and down on each cycle. These conversion attachments typically have a much shorter stroke, so the blade is barely moving.
And the stroke rate is tied to the drill's RPM.
Right. A real jigsaw has variable speed control that's tuned for cutting. You need slow strokes for metal, faster for wood, and the orbital action. The blade moving slightly forward on the upstroke is what clears sawdust and makes cutting efficient. A drill conversion gives you none of that. You get whatever speed the drill happens to be spinning at, translated into a short, choppy reciprocating motion.
So it's a saw that can't control its own speed and barely moves the blade.
And it's heavy. You've got a drill plus an attachment housing hanging off the front, and you're trying to follow a cut line with all that bulk. Precision cutting is basically impossible. Plus, the chuck is taking lateral forces from the sawing action. Same problem as the scrubbing, but much worse because sawing forces are higher.
So, this is the failure mode. The attachment is fighting the drill's nature instead of working with it.
That's exactly the pattern. A jigsaw needs controlled reciprocating motion. A drill provides continuous rotation. Converting one to the other means sacrificing the control that makes a jigsaw work in the first place. You end up with a tool that's worse at cutting than a $20 handsaw and more dangerous to use.
And that's the lens we should carry through the rest of this. Rotation extension works. Motion conversion fails. The cleaning brush extends rotation. The jigsaw converter fights it.
Which brings us to the third category Daniel asked about. Sanding and sharpening attachments, especially in the Dremel world. And this is where the pattern gets interesting, because the Dremel is a different animal entirely.
Different RPM range.
A Dremel spins at 10,000 to 35,000 RPM. That's an order of magnitude faster than a drill, and that changes what the rotation can do. At those speeds, you're not scrubbing anymore, you're grinding.
So sanding drums and flap wheels on a Dremel are doing real material removal.
And they're useful for detail work. The high RPM means a small sanding drum removes material fast, and the small size means you can get into corners and tight spots where a full-size sander can't reach. It's not a replacement for a random orbit sander on a large surface, but for detail sanding, it's excellent.
And sharpening?
Dremel sharpening attachments for blades and chainsaws work on the same principle. The tool spins fast enough to grind metal. But here's the key difference from sanding. When you're sanding, the surface guides the tool. When you're sharpening, you have to guide the tool.
So the angle becomes the user's responsibility.
And that's where most sharpening goes wrong. The tool provides the power. The user has to provide the precision. If you can't hold a consistent angle, you're not sharpening. You're just removing metal unevenly. Project Farm did testing on sharpening approaches, and the consistent finding was that attachment quality and user skill matter enormously. A guided sharpening system removes the angle guessing variable entirely. That's the real difference, not the grinding mechanism itself.
So a Dremel can sharpen a blade, but it's not the Dremel doing the sharpening. It's you, using the Dremel as a grinder.
Some people are good at that. Freehand sharpening is a real skill, but the attachment doesn't give you the skill. It just gives you the spinning stone.
Now let's zoom out to the broader accessory landscape, because Daniel asked about the whole class of aftermarket add-ons beyond screwing and driving. And this is where the pattern really gets tested.
Drill pumps. These are attachments that use the chuck to drive an impeller, which moves liquid through a hose. You mount it, attach two hoses, and spin the drill. The impeller pushes water through.
And this works?
For light fluids, yes. Draining a fish tank, emptying the sump, transferring water from a barrel. The spinning impeller is exactly what a pump does, and the drill provides the spin. It's rotation extension in its purest form.
What's the limitation?
Viscosity and pressure. These pumps can't handle thick fluids, and they can't generate much head pressure. You're not going to pump oil or push water uphill very far. But for moving water a short distance, they work fine, and they cost maybe $20.
A dedicated pump costs?
$100 up for anything decent. So for occasional use, the drill pump is a legitimate money saver.
Paddle mixers.
One of the most legitimate accessory categories there is. A paddle that mounts in the chuck and turns the drill into a paint or mortar mixer. The drill's torque and variable speed are exactly what mixing needs. You're not converting motion. You're not exceeding the tool's design envelope. You're just spinning a paddle in a bucket.
The drill already knows how to spin a paddle. That's what it does with a bit.
The only caveat is that thick mortar can stall a consumer drill. If you're mixing a full bucket of heavy mortar, you want a dedicated mixer with a more powerful motor. But for paint, thinset, grout, even small batches of concrete, a paddle mixer on a decent drill is fine.
Now the angle grinder conversion, which I suspect is where this gets ugly.
These attachments put a grinding disc on a drill chuck, and they're dangerous. Not because grinding is a rotation. Grinding is rotation. The problem is the forces involved and the safety envelope.
What does a real angle grinder have that a drill doesn't?
A guard that stays in place, a dead man switch that stops the tool if you let go, and a spindle designed for lateral forces. A drill has none of those. The chuck can't handle the sideways load of grinding, and if the disc binds, the drill can kick back violently. Plus, the drill is spinning at maybe 3,000 RPM when a grinder disc is rated for 11,000 or more. You're using the wrong tool at the wrong speed with no safety features.
The angle grinder attachment technically extends rotation, but it pushes the drill so far outside its design envelope that it becomes a different kind of failure.
This is the refinement to the pattern. It's not just rotation versus conversion. It's also about force. The drill's motor is versatile, but the chuck and the bearings are the bottleneck. They're designed for drilling forces. When you ask them to handle grinding forces, you're exceeding what the interface can safely transmit.
The refined principle is, accessories work when they extend rotation at force levels within the drill's design envelope. They fail when they convert rotation into a different motion, or when they push the tool beyond what the chuck and bearings can handle.
That's a useful framework. It covers everything we've talked about. Cleaning brushes, rotation, low force, works. Jigsaw converters, motion conversion, fails. Sanding on a Dremel, rotation, high speed but small forces, works. Sharpening, rotation, but precision is on the user. Drill pumps, rotation, low force, works. Paddle mixers, rotation, moderate force, mostly works. Angle grinders, rotation, high force, fails.
The question becomes, what does this accessory ecosystem tell us about tool design? And I think the answer is that the drill's motor is versatile, but the interface is the limitation. The chuck is the bottleneck, not the power source.
That's the second order insight. The motor inside a drill is a generic rotary power source. It could drive almost anything. The reason we buy separate tools isn't that the motor is different. It's that the interface, the chuck, the bearings, the housing, is optimized for one kind of force.
A jigsaw has a different motor, but the motor isn't the point. The point is the mechanism that converts rotation to reciprocation, and the control system that manages speed and orbital action. A drill motor could theoretically drive a jigsaw mechanism. But by the time you've built that mechanism, you've built a jigsaw.
That's why the accessory market exists at all. Because for low-force rotation-only tasks, the drill's motor is more than adequate, and the chuck is a perfectly fine interface. The accessory is just a way to get from the chuck to the task. It's a smart market response to the fact that most people already own a perfectly good rotary power source.
For high-force or motion conversion tasks, the accessory is a way to sell you something that looks like a solution, but delivers a fraction of what the dedicated tool does.
Which is the whole thing in one sentence. Buy the brush. Skip the jigsaw converter. Buy the paddle. Skip the grinder disc.
And the sanding drums?
Buy them if you already have a Dremel and you do detail work. They're cheap and they work. Just don't expect them to replace a real sander for large surfaces.
Here's what I keep thinking about. The chuck is the bottleneck. And that's not an accident. The chuck is a standardized interface. Any manufacturer can make an accessory that fits it. That standardization is what makes the accessory market possible, but it's also what limits it.
Because the chuck was designed for drill bits. It's a collet that grips a cylindrical shaft. It transmits rotation and axial force. It was never designed for lateral force, and it was never designed to be a universal power takeoff.
But the accessory market treats it like one. And for low-force rotation tasks, that's fine. The chuck can handle it. It's only when you push the force envelope that the whole thing falls apart.
That's the insight that ties everything together. The drill is a rotary power source with a chuck bolted to the front. The accessory market is an argument that the chuck should be a universal interface. And the answer is, it kind of is, but only within a narrow band of force and motion.
When you're evaluating an attachment, the question isn't, does this look useful? It's, does this ask the drill to do something it already does, at a force it already handles?
If the answer is no, the attachment is either a gimmick or a hazard.
Black & Decker, corded. The one with the orange housing.
The drill.
Summer of 94, I worked at a marina in Portsmouth. The owner had a drill with a pump attachment permanently mounted to it. The chuck had stripped out, so the pump was held on with hose clamps. The whole thing was wrapped in electrical tape.
A permanent drill pump hybrid.
He used it for bilge water. Boat comes in, you drop the intake hose in the bilge, spin the drill, water goes over the side, worked fine all season.
What was the pump attachment originally for?
Heating oil. It was a kit for transferring oil from a drum to a tank. He'd put a garden hose adapter on it so it'd take a standard hose.
He was using the wrong pump for the wrong fluid, with the wrong mounting, and it worked.
The correct way to do it was a proper bilge pump, $200 plus installation. He didn't have $200, he had a drill and a pump kit and some hose clamps.
The drill had been dropped in the harbor twice.
It still ran. Black & Decker made them tough back then.
Here's the thing. Your marina owner wasn't fighting the drill's rotation. He was using it exactly as intended. The pump was a rotation extension accessory. The hack was in the mounting, not the motion.
The forces involved were minimal. Water is light. The impeller was doing the work. The drill was just spinning it. It's the same reason drill pumps work for draining a fish tank. He was within the design envelope, just barely.
The strip chuck and the hose clamps are the part that looks like a hack, but mechanically, it was a sound setup. The pump was designed to be driven by a drill. He just had to keep it attached.
The line between a legitimate tool and a jury-rigged hack is mostly about whether you're getting paid for the job or doing it for yourself. If a contractor showed up with that thing, you'd throw him off the boat. If it's your own boat and your own drill, it's just Tuesday.
That's the thing. The accessory market exists because of that exact calculation. Most people are contractors. They're doing occasional work on their own stuff. A $20 drill pump that works fine for a season is a better deal than a $200 bilge pump that sits in a locker.
The marina owner understood the tool's limits and worked around them. He knew the drill couldn't handle high pressure, so he didn't ask it to. He knew the chuck was the weak point, so he bypassed it. That's not a hack. That's just engineering with what you have.
He sold the marina in 96. I don't know what happened to the drill. Probably still pumping.
The thing I take from that's that the pattern holds even in the messiest real-world case. The pump was rotation extension. The mounting was the only part that was improvised, and it worked because the forces were inside the envelope.
What I wonder is whether the next generation of tools makes this whole accessory market obsolete. If smart drills with better torque control become standard, do more attachments become viable? Or do dedicated tools get so cheap that the accessory market shrinks?
I think both things happen at once. Better drills make rotation extension accessories better, but the dedicated tools also get cheaper, and the gap between a drill pump and a real pump narrows.
But the deeper point is that the drill's versatility isn't really about the drill. It's about the motor being a generic rotary power source. The accessory market is an argument that we don't need specialized tools as much as we need better interfaces for the power we already own.
The chuck is the interface we have. It's not perfect, it's not universal. But for a surprising range of tasks, it's good enough.
The next time you look at a drill, the question isn't what can this make holes in, it's what can this spin. And the answer is almost anything, as long as you respect what rotation can and can't do.
As long as you remember that the chuck is the bottleneck. Work with it, not against it.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumingtop for producing.
This has been My Weird Prompts.
If you've got a weird prompt of your own, email us at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.